top of the fourth. Her mother was moving furniture. That was Trisha's first returning thought. Her second thought was that Dad had taken her to Good Skates in Lynn, and what she heard was the sound of kids rollerblading past on the old canted track. Then something cold splashed onto the bridge of her nose, and she opened her eyes. Another cold drop of water splashed down dead center on her forehead. Bright light ran across the sky, making her wince and squint. This was followed by a second crash of thunder that startled her into a sideways roll. She pulled instinctively into a fetal position, uttering a croaky little scream as she did so. Then the skies opened. Trisha sat up, grabbing and replacing her baseball cap when it fell off without even thinking about it, gasping like someone who had been tossed rudely into a cold lake, and that was what it felt like. She staggered to her feet. Thunder boomed again and lightning opened a purple seam in the air. As she stood with rain dripping from the tip of her nose and her hair lying lank against her cheeks, she saw a tall, half-dead spruce on the valley floor before her suddenly explode and fall into two flaming pieces. A moment later, the rain was sheeting down so thickly that the valley was only a sketched ghost wrapped in gray gauze. She backed up, getting into the cover of the woods again. She knelt, opened her pack, and got out the blue poncho. She put it on, better late than never, her father would have said, and sat on a fallen tree. Her head was still woozy and her eyelids were all swollen and itchy. The surrounding woods caught some of the rain, but not all of it. The downpour was too fierce. Trisha flipped up the poncho's hood and listened to the drops tap on it, like rain on the roof of a car. She saw the ever-present cloud of bugs dancing in front of her eyes and waved them away with a strengthless hand. "Nothing makes them go away, and they're always hungry. They fed on my eyelids when I was passed out, and they'll feed on my dead body. Your jam." She started to get up, and her stomach rumbled. She hadn't been hungry before, but she was now. The thought that she had been lost long enough to get hungry was awful in its own way. She wondered how many more awful things were waiting, and was glad she didn't know, couldn't see. "Maybe none," she told herself. "Hey, girl, get happy. Maybe all the awful things are behind you now." Trisha took off her poncho. Before opening her pack, she looked ruefully down at herself. She was wet from head to toe and covered with pine needles from her faint, her very first fainting spell. She would have to tell Pepsi, always assuming she ever saw Pepsi again. "Don't start that," she said, and unbuckled the pack's flap. She took out the stuff she had brought to eat and drink, laying the items out before her in a neat line. At the sight of the paper sack with her lunch in it, her stomach rumbled more fiercely. How late was it? Some deep mental clock attached to her metabolism suggested it might be around 3 p.m. 8 hours since she'd sat in the breakfast nook, slurping up cornflakes. 5 since she'd started off in this endless, idiotic shortcut. 3 o'clock. Maybe even 4. In her lunch sack was a hard-boiled egg still in the shell, a tuna fish sandwich, and some celery sticks. There was also the bag of chips, small, the bottle of water, pretty big, the bottle of Surge, the large 20-ounce size, she loved Surge, and the Twinkies. Looking at the bottle of lemon-lime soda, Trisha suddenly felt more thirsty than hungry and mad for sugar. She spun off the cap, brought the bottle to her lips, then paused. It wouldn't be smart to go chugging half of it down, she thought, thirsty or not. She might be out here a while. Part of her mind moaned and tried to draw away from that idea, just call it ridiculous and draw away, but Trisha couldn't afford to let it. She could think like a kid again once she was out of the woods, but for the time being, she had to think as much like an adult as possible. "You saw what's out there," she thought, "a big valley with nothing in it except trees. No roads, no smoke. You have to play it smart. You have to conserve your supplies. Mom would tell you the same thing, and so would Dad." She allowed herself 3 big gulps of soda, took the bottle away from her mouth, belched, took another 2 fast swallows. She then recapped the bottle securely and debated over the rest of her supplies. She decided on the egg. She shelled it, careful to put the pieces of shell back in the baggie the egg had come in. It never occurred to her then or later that littering any sign that she'd been there might actually save her life, and sprinkled it with a little twist of salt. Doing that made her sob briefly again, because she could see herself in the Sanford kitchen last night, putting salt on a scrap of waxed paper and then twisting it up the way her mother had shown her. She could see the shadows of her head and hands, thrown by the overhead light on the Formica counter. She could hear the sound of the TV news from the living room, could hear the creaks as her brother moved around upstairs. This memory had an hallucinogenic clarity that elevated it almost to the status of a vision. She felt like someone who drowns remembering what it was like to still be on the boat, so calm and at ease, so carelessly safe. She was 9, though 9 going on 10 and big for her age. Hunger was stronger than either memory or fear. She sprinkled the egg with salt and ate it quickly, still sniffling. It was delicious. She could have eaten another easily, maybe 2. Mom called eggs cholesterol bombs, but her mom wasn't here, and cholesterol didn't seem like a very big deal when you were lost in the woods, scratched up and with your eyelids so swollen by bug bites that they felt weighted down with something. Flour paste stuck to the lashes, perhaps. Tricia eyed the Twinkies, then opened the package and ate one of them. "Sexual," she said, one of Pepsi's all-time great compliments. She chased everything with a gulp of water. Then, moving quickly before either hand could turn traitor and stuff something else into her mouth, she put the remaining food back in the lunch sack. The top rolled down quite a bit further now. Rechecked the seal on her 3/4-full bottle of Surge and stowed everything in the pack. As she did, her fingers brushed a bulge in the pack's sidewall and a sudden burst of elation, perhaps partially fueled by fresh calories, lit her up. Her Walkman! She had brought her Walkman! Yeah, baby! She unzipped the inner pocket and lifted it out as reverently as any priest has ever handled the Eucharist. The headphone wire was wrapped around the body of the Walkman, and the tiny earbuds were clipped neatly to the sides of its black plastic body. Her and Pepsi's current favorite tape, Tub Thumper by Chumbawamba, was in there, but Tricia didn't care about music just then. She slipped the headphones on, nestled the earbuds into place, flipped the switch from tape to radio, and turned it on. At first, there was nothing but a soft rush of static because she had been tuned to WMGX, a Portland station. But a little further down the FM band, she came to WOXO in Norway. And when she tuned up the other way, she got WCAS, the little station in Castle Rock, a town they had passed through on their way to the Appalachian Trail. She could almost hear her brother, his voice dripping with that newly discovered teenage sarcasm of his, saying something like, "WCAS, Hicksville today, tomorrow the world." And it was a Hicksville station, no doubt about that. Whiny cowboy singers like Mark Chestnut and Trace Adkins alternated with a female announcer who took calls from people who wanted to sell washers, dryers, Buicks, and hunting rifles. Still, it was human contact, voices in the wilderness, and Tricia sat on the fallen tree transfixed, waving absently at the constant cloud of bugs with her cap. The first time check she heard was 3:09. At 3:30, the female announcer put the community trading post on hold long enough to read the local news. Folks in Castle Rock were up in arms about a bar where there were now topless dancers on Friday and Saturday nights. There had been a fire at a local nursing home, no one hurt, and Castle Rock Speedway was supposed to reopen on the 4th of July with brand new stands and loads of fireworks. Rainy this afternoon, clearing tonight, sunny tomorrow with highs in the mid-80s. That was it. No missing little girl. Tricia didn't know whether to be relieved or worried. She reached to turn off the power and save the batteries, then paused as the female announcer added,
"Don't forget that the Boston Red Sox take on those pesky New York Yankees tonight at 7 o'clock. You can catch all the action right here on WCAS, where we've got our socks on. And now back to..."
Now back to the shittiest day a little girl ever had, Tricia thought, turning off the radio and wrapping the cord around the slim plastic body again. Yet the truth was that she felt almost all right for the first time since that nasty minnow had started swimming around in her midsection. Having something to eat was partially the reason, but she suspected that the radio had more to do with it. Voices. Real human voices, and sounding so close.